Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoors, the official podcast of Living the Dream Outdoor Properties. We live by the motto, it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. And we live the outdoor lifestyle every day. Whether you're a landowner or dreaming of joining the ranks of those closest to the earth, we're your brothers and sisters of the outdoors. We hunt, we fish, we're stewards of the land. And our Living the Dream team will show you the way to enjoying the land and all the outdoor pursuits it has to offer. Here's your host, Bill Cooper.
Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Cooper, and today I'm up at the Owensville, Missouri Deer Classic. It's held at the First Baptist Church here in Owensville. Pretty good crowd going through here, and sitting at the table with me is a good friend. I guess I have to call him a boss, too. I got a lot of bosses in my life. With Jim Richmond, he's with GSM Outdoors, and he's the editor-in-chief in DeerCast. And of course, that DeerCast phone app, I've been writing for them for several years. But Jim, you come on board when with GSM?
We started writing for DeerCast kind of at the same time, back around 2019.
I can't believe it's been that long.
It's been a while, yeah. And whenever we did that, I started just kind of writing along. We have a mutual friend, Tim Chesley.
Oh, yeah. You call him a friend, huh?
Well, on certain days I do, yeah. But he kind of brought us along, and I started out in the outdoor industry and outdoor writing in 2015, and I just kind of, there's just a progression there. And then when GSM took over DeerCast, Tim moved into more of a developer role, whereas I stayed in the DeerCast role and moved up into his spot as editor-in-chief of DeerCast.
Well, I tell you, I'm 76 years old, and it's always fun working for younger guys, you know, because I'm a bit envious because you guys, you're probably born with a computer in your hands, you know.
Yeah.
And I've learned so much. I learned a lot from Tim, and I kid him all the time. You know, Ray and I kind of took Tim under a wing, and Ray really helped him, brought him up through, you know. And I love to tell a story on Tim. Tim's very inquisitive, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And he was kind of dabbling with Ray a little bit, and just point blank asked him one time, could I just come to the radio station and sit in on a radio program, see how you do it? Well, I knew what Ray would do to him. Tim came in and sat at his table. They start the program, and Ray just slides a microphone right over
there
to Tim. Hey, baptized by fire, man.
That's right. Nobody gets out of that. Yeah, right.
Oh, exactly. Of course, we love picking on the young guys anyway. But we get intimidated by the young guys, you know, because there's just so much tremendous talent out there. And it's just, I'm honored to get to contribute a little bit to DeerCast. But I know, man, I scratch my head all the time, particularly this Cody guy. And I can't pronounce his last name.
Yeah, that Cody Fongamy.
Yeah, but a great young talent, man. The guy's not only got the writing process down, but his thought process has just intrigued me.
Yeah.
Don't tell him I said that. I don't want to swell his head. You know? But I look, you know, that really gives me a great feeling about the future for the outdoor industry, because there are sharp, sharp people involved in the industry. And when you see a youngster like that, wow, I gotta admit, I'm just a hair envious as well for that kind of talent, you know. And of course, Jim, you're a great writer yourself. Well, where did you first start in the outdoor writing industry?
You know, it's funny. I'm going to tell this story at the show today, but my grandfather was a pastor, and I grew up real close to him. He got me started in the outdoors, hunting, fishing, doing all that. But I think he was also instrumental in helping me sort of focus all that and what was in my mind about that onto paper. And so that was when I was very young. I can remember making some of my best grades in creative writing.
Really?
Outdoor stuff.
Really? That's awesome.
Even with teachers that didn't have anything to do with it, didn't agree with hunting, they liked what I wrote about the outdoors, about nature, about writing. I didn't get into the nitty-gritty about hunting so much as I just kind of tried to put texture on paper to what we do, you know, what we're so used to.
Right.
And that's what sort of blossomed. And then I got into ministry after college, and I actually stepped away from the pulpit as a pastor and got into the outdoor writing in 2015, like I mentioned. And that's sort of the point where I said, you know what, I think this is time. This is the place I need to be. This is where I need to focus my energy. And the rest is history from there.
Absolutely. Well, that's a great combination. I have spent, well, I've been in the outdoor communications business for 54 years, but my original goal, and that's still my goal today, is to share the creation with people. You know, and you know yourself, there's a fascinating world out there. You are never going to run out of article material. Never, ever. If you do, you just need somebody to bump your head a little bit, you know, and refocus. Because I just feel, I've always felt so blessed to be able to be in this industry. Never dreamed I'd ever get to be the little bitty part of it that I am. But I grew up in a very poor family. We were cotton pickers, cotton farmers down in the Missouri Boot Hill. But my dad was quite an outdoorsman, a World War II vet. And could that man shoot, you know? Oh, I bet, yeah. He spent like 13 weeks on a rifle range. Many decades later, I went through officer school, and I spent 4 days on the rifle range. So I could never shoot with my dad, never even really attempted. But he taught me good, solid principles. He loved the outdoors. And, of course, all we had to hunt was rabbits and squirrels and raccoons. There were no deer or turkey, right. You know, and I've been able to watch that transpire in my lifetime. But my mom was a voracious reader, still is today, and she's 97 years old. Her eyesight is getting pretty poor, so she listens to books, you know, audio books. But she was such an inspiration to me, and she kept two sources of reading material in the house. That's all we could afford. Number one was the Bible, and she made sure I read it. I didn't like it at the time, but she made sure I read the Bible and Reader's Digest.
Yeah.
And folks as old as me, they'll remember it. Reader's Digest had a lot of little outdoor stories in it. And I got to reading those things. I'd wear that magazine out. I'd read everything. But I got to reading those little stories. I just dreamed about the day that I might be able to do something like that. Well, somebody gave me an old ragtag copy of an Outdoor Life magazine. I couldn't believe there were magazines like that. Every time I was 8 years old, I was paying for my own subscription to Outdoor Life. I read Jack O'Connor and all those guys, you know, and I just thought, how do they manage to do that sort of thing?
Yeah, I actually have a book that Jack O'Connor wrote, and I think it was Hunting Big Game. And
I've got the same book.
I found that. I was able to find that. I paid way too much for it on eBay. I couldn't find it on Amazon. Right there. I had to get on eBay and find it. But my goodness, and you mentioned something earlier. I want to talk about it.
Sure.
We're talking about us younger guys, and I'm not one of us younger guys anymore. Cody, the guy you mentioned before, he's actually quite a bit younger than I am. But you know, what's neat right now is that there's a sort of a resurgence of people wanting to get back to that, you know, the paper and hardback sort of lifestyle. You know, and I know I am. Yeah, I do a lot of my work on my computer, and I do a lot of my finalization and writing on my computer. But one of my favorite things to do, Bill, is get a notepad like what you got right here, just a legal pad out, and just write. And just get it all out. Because I'll tell you right now, there's sometimes where sitting at a computer just isn't going to do it for me. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
I'm not going to get the same result sitting at a computer, putting it in there, as I am going to be just sitting and reading or sitting and pulling a notepad out and just, even if I can't even read it very good, my handwriting is atrocious.
Oh, hey, mine is awful. In fact, I got a warning letter at my day job one time over my handwriting.
Yeah.
That's how bad mine is.
Yeah, yeah. So that's kind of the guy I am, though. I'm kind of caught in the middle. You know, you got our younger generation coming up. Boy, they're good at social media. They're good at computer.
Oh, incredible.
AI. They're good at all that stuff. And then you got the older generation and kind of where you kind of cut your teeth, and Ray and some of those other guys, it was all, you know, slip magazines and hardback books, softback books. And then you got the middle guys, and I kind of feel like I'm in that middle. I'm straddling the fence a little bit.
Well, you got the best both worlds.
Yeah, maybe so. The hard part's keeping up with all the younger guys. You kind of feel that heat coming, and you're like, man, I just can't keep up with it. So what I like to do is I'll even go and I'll just sit and write a story. You know, I write a lot of tactical stuff. I read a lot of tactical stuff, you know, thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of words a year just on how to kill a deer. But you know, that doesn't even touch it for me. I've got to have good written stories. And man, that's for me, that's where the sweet spot is. I've got to have that.
Well, I understand that, and I've always had that habit. Of course, I worked for UPS for 34 years, and I never went into management. I thought that's what I wanted to do, but it didn't take me long to say, nah, I wasn't really cut out for that. I love being in the outdoors, and I've run all over the Ozarks in a UPS truck. Now, back in the old days, they couldn't track us, you know,
right.
So
yeah.
I had been known to wander off course a little bit to go to a stream. I'd keep a trout rod in my truck,
yep. And
I'd stop and swim for an hour. I had to take an hour break. But eventually, I got smart enough to carry a notepad with me, and I wrote lots of short stories over that hour lunch break while I was sitting on the banks of Current River or, you know, some creek or something. But then I got to carrying a little pocket recorder with me. I'd be driving down the road, and boy, I just got what I thought was an ingenious thought, you know. And I record 30 seconds worth of material or a minute or two. And that became just a standard for me, and I don't do it so much anymore. But you're exactly right. So much of this outdoor communications business, particularly writing, has to be kind of a spontaneous thing. And that's been one of the most difficult things for me to adjust to over the years. As you get, I've seen a real transpiration in outdoor media, particularly hard copy. You know, I've just literally cried when I've had some magazines go out of business. Cabela's Outfitters Journal comes to mind.
Yeah.
Man, I love that magazine. I love writing for it, you know. And you've lived long enough. You've seen some magazines go under. We're watching newspapers have a horrible time, you know. I wouldn't want Brent Frazee to know this, but I shed some tears when he basically lost his job. You know, he'd been with the Kansas City Star for 35, 36 years. And they kind of pushed him out, I guess, you know. And he's still writing, though. But I don't think they replaced him. You know, the Kansas City Star, I would have never thought I would have lived long enough to see that happen. But got to roll with the punches, right?
That's right. Yeah. I don't think good written stories, and nowadays with the ability we have with photography, even a cell phone can get some incredible photography. I don't think that it'll ever go out of style. It'll kind of go out and get less popular, but then it'll come back. And I really think, you know, you see Field and Stream, for example, they came back in a little different way.
Right.
But their new stuff, man, I love taking their magazine and just piecing through it. Now, am I going to get it in my mailbox every month? No, I'm not going to. But I am going to be able to still get that satisfaction of looking at the effort somebody put in to trying to put the outdoors into words. And I think there's some power in that video and some of the stuff that's out there just doesn't get. You know what I mean? We're just not going to get that out of any other method. So I'm thankful though that there are still a lot of publications. You know, you look at publications like North American Whitetail. You look at I don't know if Buckmaster still does one or not. Whitetail's Unlimited. I don't know. I don't remember all the ones that are out there still doing hard copy publications. But I'm thankful that they're still sort of, flying that flag, so to speak, and still keeping it up.
Absolutely. Well, again, as old as I am, I have a great deal of faith in you younger guys.
Yeah.
And you're still young to me, see, by several generations.
Yeah. Yeah.
And but I have faith because this Cody has so inspired me because I see such quality coming out of that young man. Man, I'd be a cheerleader for him if I could, you
definitely.
Know, because not only is he up to date on everything, all the latest social media, computers, you know, he's just a whiz to me, but he also has the ability to communicate with that generation that I'm afraid I really don't have anymore, you know. I can tell my stories and do my thing, but I'm not sure it soaks in between the ears as well as it does coming from somebody their own age.
Sure.
And so again, gives me a great deal of faith in the future because I hope those Codys keep coming, and I think they will.
They're out there, and I'm on the Professional Outdoor Media Association board, executive.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you. And you know what's funny is that we do see a lot of the digital space, and it's huge. It's enormous. We can't even wrap our minds around how big it is or how big it's going to get. But I will say this: there are within that organization, and I'm just going to plug it for a second.
Sure, absolutely.
Within POMA, there are some unbelievably talented writers and photographers and videographers, and a lot of them do work together to bring that sort of media out on all fronts. You know, we got a lot of different fronts, and really, I feel like no matter what medium you're in, we're all part of a mission, so to speak. And that mission is to keep hunting and fishing at a high standard and to keep it at the forefront of things like political lobbying. We need a voice there. We need a voice in all those things. And you know, the fact is we've got to be in all those spaces. If we're not, we will get tamped out. We will get pushed to the back. But so we do have to be good at all of those things, and we all have to be very good in all of our respective places, even though there's some overlap. Even though I do photography as a writer or as a marketing person, or even though somebody might do videography and photography, we all need to be our very best across all of those attack points. Otherwise, it'll get snuffed out, and you won't. And I'll tell you, this is why I feel so passionate about it. My son, he's a competitive bass fisherman. He's 14. Loves fishing for the National Youth Fishing Association tournaments. But you know what's funny is he could be on YouTube all day if he wanted to. I mean, all day long. If he wanted to watch bass fishing stuff, he watches all the lake reports from wherever his next tournament's coming up. He watches all that stuff. But you know what I catch him doing more than not is opening an edition of Bass Magazine. You know, or something like that. He'll get into those magazines and he'll just sit there for hours, and he'll either cut clips out of them, or he'll just sit there and read them, or he'll just sit there and look at what the new rods and reels are coming out. You know, it doesn't matter. But that right there tells me, Bill, that in the human brain, regardless of their age, there needs to be that handheld, you know, tactile ability to turn the page of a book or feel the page of a magazine and look at the work that someone's mind and heart and talent put into an article. There's just no replacement for it.
You're absolutely correct. And I would say only short of being able to sit down face-to-face and talk to Bill Dance or somebody like that,
that's right.
That magazine, you do get to hold it in your hand.
That's right.
And it feels very personal. Yeah. Well, I hope that helped keep our business alive. But, again, I do have great confidence. But, you know, you've had it. I've had it for decades. Young folks come up, well, I want to do what you do. How do I do that? And I don't know what kind of advice you give, but I often say, go do something else. I do tell them, get an education. That eliminates a lot of people. They don't want to put in that effort. Now, you and I have seen overnight successes, but they're very, very rare. Most of us, like you and I, we start at that ground level. But what has made you successful, Jim Richmond? Persistence.
That's right.
You hang right in it through the good times, the bad times. And, boy, there's been so many times over the years that I thought, man, why do I even do this? And I used to write for so many publications. I never really got into New Year's resolutions, but I would sit down and make a list on one of these yellow tablets that of everybody I wrote for. And then, you know, the dollar got to be a little bit more important as I had a family and that sort of thing. So if I was feeling stressed and just overloaded, I'd start right at the bottom. The guy that sent the fewest dimes got struck off that list, you know. Well, I don't have to do that anymore because there's not that many of them out there.
Right. Yeah, persistence is really the key. And people have asked me, you know, how'd you get to where you are? And I used to ask people the same question, you know, before I started working full-time in marketing and media. And I'll be real honest, I don't know. I don't know how I got here. All I know is that one day I basically made myself a website and I just started writing. And that's it. And then I started coming to things like this here in Owensville, and I started talking to people. And what's funny is you kind of do this over the years, and all of a sudden you start showing up at these things, and our industry is still pretty small.
It is very small.
Even though the media side's huge, you start coming to these, and you start recognizing more people, and it's because you met them before.
Exactly.
And then all of a sudden, you're spending more of your time sitting around talking than necessarily looking at products or things like that. And it's those relationships you build. And then you get a phone call that says, "Hey, I kind of forgot about you. You need some work." well, yeah, I can use some wood.
Well, absolutely.
That's just kind of how it works. You know, you got to pay your dues. You can't build a house without a foundation.
Exactly. And boy, it does take time. It takes a lot of work. But those interactions with other people, networking is a big word today, but that's gone on for a very long time. And if you're very fortunate in this, I did a lot of volunteer work over the years through the NWTF and other organizations. But Jim, I also ran an outdoor ministry for youth program, which was a backpacking program. But long before that, I was taking my Sunday school class at camping, you know.
Right.
Fortunately, I lived in a rural community and lots of farmers, people that lived on the Merrimack River, and they let us take kids out at camp and that sort of thing. So I've always had been very fortunate to be involved with a lot of people. But, you know, you meet very unique people in the outdoor industry. And I think Ray and I first might have hooked up many decades ago, before there was even a youth deer season in Missouri. We actually held the first youth deer hunt before there was a youth deer season. Yeah, down at Peck Ranch. I think there was some special legislation passed for that. We were allowed to take, I think it was 9 kids in there. 8 of them, of course, harvested deer. One little boy missed and cried his eyes out. And I think we cried with him, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But Ray and some people from Cabela's helped set that up. And, boy, was it ever a great success. But from there, Ray and really helped me out more than anybody in the outdoor industry. He kind of took me under his wing. And he called one time, and he was getting ready to have a turkey hunting media camp. Would you like to come to my media camp? Don't laugh at me, Jim. What is that?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, and from there, Ray hooked me up with so many people. And, hey, I did him, too. I took him to Mexico one time. I had it's been the best gig I ever got into in my life, but I got an invite from a duck hunting outfitter in the Yucatan to come down and do some PR work for them. And first time I'd been to Yucatan, so I planned ahead a little bit, planned for 4 or 5 extra days. And this gentleman, I asked him, I said, "You know anybody to take me tarpon fishing?" "Oh, yeah, Captain Encolada over at Campeche. I'll put you on a bus tomorrow." I didn't realize I'd be riding with the pigs and the chickens and everything else.
Man.
It was quite an experience, but met Captain Encolada, who was tall, dark, handsome, suave-talking Mexican dude that was hooked up and did a little work with the Campeche State Tourism Commission. He introduced those folks, and I ran rider trips to the Yucatan for 3 years for them.
Oh, man.
And after that job ended, well, I knew other outfitters, and I've been working with the same outfitter for 12 years now.
Wow.
This guy has 162,000 acres leased up in the Yucatan, and let me tell you, young folks, good way to play things is, I thought, I could probably make some serious money off this guy, but I'm going to make him an offer. If he'll take care of me as long as he can, pay my expenses, I won't charge him anything. And we've never exchanged a dime in 15 years.
Wow.
But I do a good job of making him feel guilty, I think, because after I spend 2 weeks to a month in his jungle camp, you know, a piece of heaven, he sends me to one of his 2 beach houses. I go stay for 2 or 3 days. Young Mexican couple there that takes care of me, you know, cooks for me. I catch up on my computer work. Then he sends me to the coast to tarpon fish for a week, all expenses paid.
What a terrible way to live.
It's just horrible. But I'm just telling you, that's the kind of gigs that are out there. And if you play your situation right, you can work out some incredible deals. But I learned part of that from a gentleman. I was on an all-black ministers college board in South Texas. And a Reverend Germany, a white guy, had set this school up many decades ago. And he had been the victim of the same sheriff and gang of guys in Mississippi Burning, the movie. They almost killed Reverend Germany, but he held on, moved from Texas from Mississippi to Texas to keep this school going. But this guy was a bird hunter, had several thousand acres in South Texas, actually made his living selling bird dogs and worked for the college for free,
right,
kind of gentleman he was. But I got invited to his quail hunting camp after a board meeting one time. And I went down, I was so flabbergasted at what I was seeing. I didn't pick up a gun for 2 days. I just followed this gentleman and photographed him and his dogs and the other guys. And I got home, I printed all 75 photographs and sent to Reverend Germany. And this old man called me a few days later on the phone crying. He said, Bill, I've had hundreds of guys go through this camp, but nobody ever took the time to do what you did. And yeah. You can come back here anytime you want to.
There you go.
Bingo, the lights came on.
Well, you're touching on something, Bill, I think that's really important. I wish a lot of folks in my generation and younger, I hope that somebody out there gets a hold of this. And that is that our industry did not start with us. It did not start with our generation. It started back in the 80s. It started with guys like Ray and you and the Drurys and the Primos and Mossy Oak and some of these other, and Realtree. Those guys had put in their hearts and minds that we want hunting to become something in this nation that is sustainable, that is important to the rest of the nation, that's important to Washington, that's important to all kinds of places. We want it to be important to the states. And nothing I do today is anything I built on my own.
Exactly.
Everything I do today is built on the sacrifice that had been made before me, the work, the hard foundational work that's been put in before I even thought about writing my first article for anybody. And, you know, I went to like stuff like National Wild Turkey Federation last year, their big convention. 80-something thousand people.
Yeah, incredible event.
It was so busy on the floor, you couldn't even walk around.
Like, boy, I was there, I think, a few days prior to you coming.
But that's the thing that kept going through my head when I was down there. Because everybody's got YouTube channels. Everybody's got social media channels. Everybody, you know, has some sort of touch with outdoor industry. And the guys that started this back in the day, they had no idea what this would become. But even now, I do hope that somebody, in my generation and younger, I hope that we all sort of say, you know what? I'm humble enough to know that if somebody buys my article or buys my video or has me on their hunting team, that I hope they remember that nothing we're doing right now was really started by me at all. I am not a self-made writer. I am not a self-made videographer. I somehow picked this up as an idea from somewhere before me, and now I can sit down and write about my 200-inch deer that I killed, or I can write about my Grand Slam of turkeys or my World Slam of turkeys, and I have a platform that I can do that for because of people that came 40 years ago before me.
Exactly, but somebody saw something in you that they wanted to help develop, and now the shoe's on the other foot.
Right.
You're doing the same thing, but that's how it works. I mean, we have our heroes that we look to.
Oh,
yeah.
Sure.
In fact, I was inducted a couple of years ago in the Leslie Outdoors National Hall of Fame, and it was so cool because when I got inducted, Will Primos and Bill Jordan both got inducted. And I asked Gary Macy, why weren't these guys in here 20 years ago? Well, I didn't realize you have to show up to get inducted. Those guys were too busy to show up.
Yeah, that's right.
But I remember making a statement. I'm looking at all those guys as I was doing my little acceptance speech. You know, I said, oh, look at all you outdoor icons out here, and I thought you were my childhood heroes. I'm as old as you.
You know, I remember that event. We actually had you on the 100%
Wild podcast. Oh, that's right.
A couple years ago to kind of talk about that. I think we actually did a story on it on DeerCast as well. But you know, that's the stuff I'm so proud of in this industry. And it seems like every year I meet somebody else you almost always talk. You very rarely talk to anybody that's in outdoor media that goes, you know, I don't know anybody. I've never done anything, and I'm, you know, this is a big success. It's always, man, I remember Bill Cooper doing this for me. I remember Ray I, or I remember Mark Drury or Terry Drury, or I remember, you know, Bill Jordan, or I remember, you know, all these different icon people. And I tell you what, the biggest part of that is, and this is another thing I think we all need to remember, is that once you get to this place, and Bill, you've been so good about this, once you get to a place where you can help somebody else. I have somebody in my life, named Kevin Paulson. He has Hunting Life magazine.
Yep.
And Kevin was the first one that said, yeah, I'll let you put your article in my magazine. And I thought, you know what? I've never, I don't know of anybody in the world that would have read that article and been like, yeah, that's fine.
Oh, well, you know, call it luck.
Yeah, that's right.
But I don't believe much in luck.
No, I don't either. And you know, like I said, that's what's so cool about this industry is we have to be able to remember where we came from. We have to remember to always reach down and help somebody else get their start. You know, always reach down, pull somebody up, and help them get their start.
Absolutely. Jim, we would be amiss if we closed this session out and we didn't talk about DeerCast for just a couple of minutes.
Sure. Yeah, let's do it.
Absolutely. We both got bosses up there, you know.
You're right.
You bet. But DeerCast, how long has it been around?
I believe 2018 is when DeerCast launched, if I'm remembering accurately. I feel like it's been a little bit longer than that, but I think that's when we officially went public with it. And then you and I started writing for it not long after that. And so DeerCast, at its conception, was Mark and Terry Drury essentially said, you know what, we want to take, they had their 13 series, right? So they break the deer season down into 13 phases, super helpful content. Some of the most in-depth stuff you'll find out there. And they essentially said, we're going to take that information, we're going to take our trail camera imagery, we're going to take what we've learned over 40 years worth of hunting, actually combined 90-something years, and we're going to distill this down into an algorithm in an app. And then we're going to add mapping, and we're going to add content. And so it's really, you know, it was this huge growth, and now we're sort of at this place where we can look even closer at what we already have and we can make it better. And that's really, I love being in the position we're in because it is tough because there's a lot of forecasting apps out there.
Wow, yeah.
But on the other hand, I can take DeerCast, and what I used to take hours preparing for a deer hunt to do, excuse me, what used to take me hours, I can do in a few minutes. Because I can look at DeerCast and I can go, okay, here's my barometer, here's my wind direction. I can open my maps and I can go, okay, I can verify this is what my wind's going to do when I get in this particular position. And I've even used it, Bill, for spot and stuff. I've used it for, you know, our standard tree stand hunting. I have used it to move midday or mid-hunt because all of a sudden the wind was at my face and now it's hit me in the back of the head. It's no good anymore, so I'm going to move.
Yep.
Sorry, I'm getting all choked.
Yeah.
But DeerCast in general has been super helpful to a lot of hunters. Now, here's what I'll say. It hasn't been without challenges either.
Oh, absolutely.
Because on a daily basis, we get, oh, it's a gimmick, or oh, it's this, or oh, it's, you know, you can't use it for anything. It's no good. Just hunt. I'll say this. Without hesitation, yes, just hunt. Just go. You get limited vacation time. You get, you know, you don't always get the weather you need. You don't always get the fronts you need. You always get the wind you need. Go hunt. But if you are a hunter like me that essentially likes to put target packages together on specific deer, or if you're just eating up with it, just eat up with deer hunting, you say, you know what, I'm just going to do everything I can do to learn about deer. I just want to kill a deer. It's going to put you on the right track no matter where you start.
Absolutely. And one of the features is I love all those mapping features, but I'm all the time, if I'm in a new spot, I'm pulling up those maps and I can see who the landowners are around me. And I have contacted some of those people. Some of them have let me hunt, some not, but at least I know who they are and where they are and what they're doing.
Yep.
You know, so there's so many aspects, but boy, you young guys got to remember, you're wearing us old guys out with this constant flow of new.
So around here at the show, there's a guy over here that has a drone. It's a big drone.
It's a big drone.
He said it lifts 260 pounds, I think.
Yep.
My brother and I laughed. We're like, we're just going to hire him to come get our deer out for us. Just have him pick them up.
Yeah, fly them out. Yeah, I told him I'd rode on a helicopter smaller than that tank.
Yeah. And but no, even with that, so in the summertime, we're coming up on things like shed hunting season.
Absolutely.
Food plot season. DeerCast has literally everything you need for those. So for shed hunting,
It has a program called Path Tracker in there.
Yep.
So you can turn that on, and if whether you're hunting up north or in northern Missouri or, you know, ag ground, or if you're like me and you hunt the big hollers of sort of south central Missouri, I love Path Tracker when I'm shed hunting, because I can see a pattern for where, how I'm walking. I can turn that on and it'll track me everywhere I'm walking. So I'm not over, you know, doubling up, or I can be like, you know what, where I'm walking right now doesn't really make as much sense as if I was over here along this bedding edge or this bedding cover or whatever. So I can use that data to change or adjust how I'm looking for sheds. I know a lot of people, sheds don't really mean a whole lot to you, you know, but if you are hunting a property that's heavily managed and you want to know, hey, I don't have pictures of the Big Ten, but I want to get out and see if I can find his sheds, that's a big help. Now, let's talk about food plot season.
Oh, yes.
Huge help for food plot season, because we've got things like our area tool, our plot tool. If you're ordering seed, you can measure out your food plot, lay it all out just right, and then you're not wasting money on too much seed or too little seed. Then you get into, you know, let's talk about August when there's, you know, we're either praying for rain or praying for the rain to stop. You know, one of the two. There's no middle ground in Missouri. We don't get just a good, you know, good August. It's usually one or the other. During that time of year, you can also put on things like your rain station. You can drop a rain station. Let's say, you know, if you hunt 4 hours away, you're not going to go up there and kick dirt every weekend to see if there's
exactly
rain. Well, you turn on your rain stations. And you know, okay, I see that I had, you know, half an inch of rain last weekend that nobody else got. Well, that's good for me. I don't have to get up there and worry about my food plots. Or, hey, I need to hire some farmer somewhere to get me a tank of water out there to, you know, do something. So there's all kinds of things. And I'm afraid that a lot of people don't know about all that. That's part of my job, is to flesh that out, show people, my goodness, you literally only need one app. Now, most of us don't just have one app. I get that for anything.
Right.
Multiple apps. Totally understandable. But here's another layer. We have seasonally appropriate, seasonally relevant articles, seasonally relevant video. Mark and Terry Jury have seasonally relevant stuff that goes up there all the time that you can jump into your
every day.
Every day. And sometimes more than once a day.
Yes.
And it's so much more than just October, November, December, when we're putting kills up there, which is just dizzying how many deer kills come.
Yeah, they is. But it's so much fun to watch.
It absolutely is.
You're going to laugh at me. I get up early in the morning, but I think the deer cast stuff usually comes up around 6 a.m. I set that time. I'm on my phone checking that DeerCast app. It's 6 a.m. every morning. So don't call me at 6 o'clock and expect me to talk to you.
That's right. That's right. So there's two things I look at first thing in the morning. I need to mention this feature, too. There's my trail camera imagery. That's the first thing I open up in the morning.
Oh, really?
My stealth cam on my command app.
Yep.
And then I open up my DeerCast. And that's the first two things I look at every day after I do my Bible study.
Yep.
But that's what I look at. And the thing is, that now, I don't know if a lot of people know this or not, but in command, if you just want to try DeerCast out, if you want to look at the weather and the DeerCast forecast, if that's all you want to see, you don't want to dig into the maps and stuff, you don't want to buy DeerCast yet, totally fine. You can, if you have command, if you have a stealth cam, a muddy camera, or a wild game innovation cam, you can look in your command app and you can see the day's DeerCast right there now. Or if you have DeerCast already and you want to look at your trail camera pictures, you can use the trail camera integration from Command App in DeerCast, and you don't even have to open Command anymore.
Wow. I'm not supposed to remember all this, am I?
No. Again, that's my job. I want to get it all out there. I want people to know about it. But I'll tell you my top secret, though, and it's helped me a ton. The spring coming up, when January 1st gets here, I know deer season doesn't end until January 15th. But when January 1st gets here, my mind goes one place, Bill. You know where that is? Turkeys.
Oh, yeah.
Turkeys. I love turkeys.
Well, honestly, it's hard for me to talk about deer because I love turkeys so much. You know, but
I love
absolutely.
But most people don't know it. But I use DeerCast as much or more during turkey season as I do.
That makes two of us.
Mostly because of the weather. I don't know if you realize this or not, but our weather in DeerCast is one of the top-ranking weather forecasting apps in all of the app stores.
Doesn't surprise me.
It's one of the top ones. So when I wake up to go turkey hunting in the morning, I can look at my wind speed. I can look at my barometric pressure, and buddy, if that little line on that barometric pressure hits 30, boy, I get excited because I'm ready to go chase some turkeys. And it's an all year tool. People don't realize that. They think, oh, it's only good for October. No. You can use it all year, whether you're food plotting, whether you're turkey hunting, whether you're shed hunting. Yeah, I sit on it the whole time I'm out there deer hunting too. But a lot of that's because it's my job. But a lot of it is because I just love the way it's formatted. I love the way it's laid out. And I don't like having too many things. I get overwhelmed. I don't like having too many things and then missing a detail and screwing up a hunt because I didn't look at it.
Exactly. But the great advantage that I see, again, speaking, 70-something years old, hey, if you're a modern-day hunter, I mean, yeah, I was there in the days you went out just because you had the vacation time or the day off or whatever. And I don't care if it rained, it snowed, it hailed, it did whatever. I was at least going to check it out, But now I've been guilty. Check that DeerCast app. Oh, man, the wind's going to be so strong tomorrow. Martin Terry's saying it's still going to be a good day to deer hunt. Well, I can go any day I want to go these days, So I have laid in bed a few times, but I'm not one that stays up, that gets up late at all. And you're talking about checking that DeerCast app at 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm one of these guys. I'm up about every 2 hours, and there's a reason for that, And so that command, it wakes me up. I keep my phone right there by me. It goes off during the night. I look to see what's standing there.
Yeah.
Well, where was that buck when I was in the blind, that sort of thing.
Right.
But just a tremendous, tremendous tool. And you guys fascinate me with the knowledge that you have, with what you keep bringing up. But I'm not shocked coming from the Drury boys, because I've known them since they were almost little guys. And I've actually got photographs of Mark winning, I think, his first Missouri State championship in turkey calling, and he was one of the first guys that I ever saw strut around while they were calling. This guy's lost his mind,
Now you go to NWTF and they're doing, they're practically hanging from the rafters.
Oh, I know.
In the roost tree trying to.
quite a comical thing. Well, tell people how they can get the DeerCast app, Jim.
So all you have to do is go to your app store and look up DeerCast. It doesn't matter if you have Android or iPhone. You can do both. It's there. Get on there, download it. The initial thing you'll get is a free version of it, so you can look at it, kind of break down some of the things. I will say this, that Elite Plus or Unlimited, once you've gotten used to DeerCast and think, this is a pretty good tool, well, that Elite Plus upgrade is money. I mean, you can see so much there. And you can also, when you get that upgrade, you can also get in and really start to pick apart how your property works. And you mentioned, we've all been guilty of looking at DeerCast, oh, it's a bad day, wind's going to be too high or whatever. Maybe that's the only day you have. Well, what DeerCast does for you on those days, whether you have free or Elite Plus or whatever, is it can help you adjust your hunting strategy. So in other words, you have one stand that you like to hunt, okay? Now that's all you have access to. Well, that's fine, but you may see, well, it's going to be wrong wind speed, it's going to be a bad day. But down here around 1 o'clock, it's going to look a little bit better. Well, just sit out till 1 o'clock and go do it. How many of those 9, 10 o'clock bucks have you killed, Bill?
Uh-huh.
Just because that rain just moved out or the wind changed and you were able to slip in there and do what you needed to do, So it's not always I think I've seen that a lot. I've seen a lot of guys be like, oh, I can't use it because it says bad. It's a good day to be hunting. I see all kinds of gear. Well, maybe. But if you look at that hourly breakdown, once you get into that Elite Plus and you get 14-day breakdown, hourly breakdown of what DeerCast is, then you start to see, oh boy, now I can really use this for something. You know what I mean? So I would definitely recommend an upgrade as soon as you can.
Absolutely. Well, Jim, man, it's been absolutely wonderful having you on the program. We're kind of long-winded guys. This is probably one of the longest segments I've ever recorded. Hey, beautiful thing about podcasts, so you get on a roll.
That's right.
You don't have to stop. Well, we're at Owensville Deer Classic up at Owensville, Missouri. Been a lot of people gone through here. Oh, are there ever some dream racks in here, Jim?
Oh, yeah. You walk in the door and there's a 200 staring at you.
I know. I'll have nightmares for a while. But I'm going to take a short break here. When I come back, we're going to talk to some of the organizers of the Deer Classic. So don't go away. I'm Bill Cooper.
Our forefathers gave us a Bill of Rights. One of those is the right to step in the front door of Pond Center, where the faint sound of eagles screeching from on high a bounding purple mountain's majesty browls the walls full of glorious firearms. It's hard not to shed a patriotic tear as your red, white, and blue blood becomes fortified by the sight of true freedom. Pond Center, located at 408 Highway 72 East in Rolla, Missouri. Or give us a call at 573-426-GUNS.
Hey, this is John from CoAngler.com. Did you know that CoAngler.com is the newest online platform to connect anglers for fishing trips? You can create your free account, offer and request fishing trips, connect with anglers in your area, share some costs, share some knowledge, and share a great time in the outdoors. Whether you're fishing from a boat and you got an extra seat and want somebody to come with you, or you need some help shuttling those kayaks for your next float trip, CoAngler is a great way to connect with like-minded anglers in your area for a great time out on the water. So get on CoAngler.com and let's go fishing.
Hey there, listeners. At Conservation Federation of Missouri, we're more than just advocates for our environment. We're active in making a difference through hands-on programs that protect and preserve Missouri's natural resources. By becoming a member, you're supporting impactful initiatives like Share the Harvest, which provides venison to families in need, and Operation Game Thief, which helps combat poaching and protects our wildlife. You're also contributing to the RISPR grants, which fund local conservation projects across the state. Your membership makes these vital programs possible, ensuring that we continue to serve both our communities and our environment. Plus, as a member, you'll receive updates on these programs, invitations to exclusive events, and the opportunity to get involved in the work you care about most. Visit confedmo.org/join
to learn more and to join us today.
Together, we can support programs that protect Missouri's wildlife, waters, and wildlife. Be a part of the Conservation Federation of Missouri, where action leads to conservation.
Hey everyone, this is Michael Collins with Misty Mountains Guiding Service. I'm here to talk to you a little bit about what we offer. Misty Mountains is a smallmouth and trout-specific guiding service that caters to the northern Ozarks region. My areas include the Upper Merrimack River, the Gasconade, and a few smaller creeks in the Mid-Missouri area. Whether you enjoy casting streamers to bass, drifting a dry fly, or ripping lips with spinning gear, I've got you covered. Fishing is made easy in my state-of-the-art drift boat raft. I control the boat with ease while you or yourself and a buddy do all the work at catching fish. Besides a great day on the water, I provide all needed gear, a delicious shore lunch, and as much fishing knowledge as you can carry with you on the way home. Spots for the 2024 season are going fast. Give me a call or text today to get your trip booked. My number is 573-823-9057. Find me on Facebook and Instagram at Misty Mountains Guiding Service. It's always an adventure with Misty Mountains.
This is Dan from the White Buffalo Fly Shop, your gateway to Missouri's blue ribbon trout streams and world-class smallmouth water. Whether you're headed to Mill Creek, the Kern, or the Gasconade, we've got the flies, the gear, and the local know-how to help you fish with confidence. If you're looking to sharpen your casting skills, join one of our hands-on clinics. Or if you'd like to craft your own fly rod, build it with us in one of our rod building courses. You're always welcome in our fly tying nights to swap stories, share patterns, and get the latest hatch reports. White Buffalo Fly Shop is more than just a place to gear up. It's a hub for our local community. You'll find us at 605 North Pine Street in Rolla or online at whitebuffaloflyshop.com.
Welcome back to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I'm Bill Cooper. I've been up at the Owenfield Deer Classics in Owenfield, Missouri today. In the first half of the program, I hope you got to hear it. I had Jim Restman on. He's with GSM Outdoors, and he's editor-in-chief of DeerCast. And Jesse Wilson, Jim is one of my many bosses. Yep. I write for DeerCast, and hey, he's a great young man, very talented. And of course, those young fellows give me a little grief once in a while, you know. They're the age they were all born with a computer in their hands. Yes. You know, I'm almost 80 years old, so I had to learn the hard way.
Yeah, I know.
Well, with me in the second half is Jesse Wilson. He's a member of the First Baptist Church here in Owensville, and he's also the leader of the men's ministry group. Well, I got to hand it to you, Jesse. You've bit off quite a chunk there taking that job on. Yeah, but what a wonderful, wonderful ministry. And this is one of a couple events you guys have throughout the year. You mentioned that you also have a bow shoot.
Yeah, we just have a bow shoot out of the church camp, which is about 10 minutes away from here. The guys of the church get out there. We put some 3D targets out in the woods and spend the afternoon. The last 2 years, it's been very hot, so it's not been the greatest. Shoot, you know, try to pick a cool night, but it's not working that way.
Yeah.
So we have something to eat and then just have a little devotion after that.
You bet. Those are great events, and I'm a big believer in them. I attend Deer Creek Church, which is not that far from here, out on F Highway out of Cuba. We have a regular archery range set up out back with the 3D targets and all that stuff. They have little competitions once in a while, or you can come over and just shoot on your own, you know. But we have another very neat little event that I laugh every time it comes up. It's called a diaper shoot. When one of the young ladies in the church is going to have a baby, of course they got to have a baby shower, you know. Well, the guys want to get in on it too, so we got a little skeet range set up out there, and we have a diaper shoot. And you have to bring a case of diapers to enter, you know, so it helps the ladies out as well.
Yep.
Well, my wife was an NRA pistol instructor in her past, and she's a very good shot. So we have a rather bulky young pastor who's a great outdoorsman, Reverend Tommy Miller. We love him to death. But one Sunday morning, he was announcing a diaper shoot. That Diane and I hadn't been going to church for a real long time. And she raises her hand. I thought, I hope everybody don't think she's pregnant. You know, I'm almost 80 years old. And I couldn't imagine what she wanted. And so Tommy recognized her. Can I help you, Diane? Yeah, can the girl shoot in the diaper shoot? And he kind of stuttered for a second, you know. I'm sitting there shaking my head. No, and I don't know if you know Spencer Hudson or not. Spencer said, hey, Bill's shaking his head no. And Tommy says, what's that all about? And I said, don't let her shoot against us. He said, he laughed. He said, well, why? I said, you'll find out. Yeah. She'll beat us all. Yeah. She did.
Yeah,
she did. She did, for real.
We're out there at that church camp. The guys like seeing how far they can shoot.
And
some of the guys of our church can shoot 70 to 75 yards with their bow.
Oh, wow.
It's not a crossbow.
Yeah.
They're good at it.
Yep. I've seen guys do it. The guys, particularly with the equipment today, and they put the time in. Yeah, they can do it. I'll leave that to the young guys. I never was that great with a bow. I mean, I've killed deer out to 35, 40 yards, you know. But, of course, I'm old enough I have to use that crossbow anymore. I'm not real fond of them. They're heavy, they're awkward, and it's pretty much a one-shot deal. Yeah, I've actually shot at bucks 3 times before I killed them with my old recurve or compound, you know. But, Jesse, let's talk about the event today, this Owensville Deer Classic. Man, this is a fun little event. First time I've been, although it's been going on, I guess, for several years.
Yeah, I tried to talk to some of the guys at the church. And the last I can think of is we started doing 2010, maybe.
Yeah.
Every other year.
Uh-huh.
So that way people can rightly get more people in here with their deer to score.
Yes. Is that your major draw to the event, people bringing antlers in to score? Well, I started drooling as soon as I walked in the building. There's some pretty nice deer antlers in here, some big racks. And somebody made the comment, I think it was Jim Richmond, said, as soon as you walk in the door, there's 200-inch deer staring you in the face.
That 200-inch deer has been shot right here about 10 miles away from this.
Wow.
Church.
Well, they're here. I lived over 40 years out northeast of St. James on the upper Burbass River. And I won't call any names, but a couple of years ago, this young man killed a 212 out there. And it was on the way downhill. They had photos of it. It's actually larger the year before. So there are those scattered monsters here. And, of course, when I first come to this part of the world, I never deer hunted. I come from the Missouri Boot Hill. And, of course, born in 49 and all we had was rabbits and squirrels and coons to hunt, you know. So I'd been out deer hunting one time, I think, when I landed here after college in the military. Had an old gentleman in church that kind of insisted I go. He brings a rifle to church. It was an old Sporterized 0383. And just to be able to tell the gentleman I went deer hunting, I waited until the very last afternoon of deer season. And hunted on a farm on the upper Burbass. Hadn't even shot this rifle. It was open sights. And you know what happened? A monster buck walked out in front of me, and I missed it, of course. And I didn't really know what I'd missed, but a friend of mine killed that buck the next year, and it scored 182. Biggest buck I've ever shot at now in 40 years of deer hunting, but it's the way it goes. But this event looked like very well attended. You can tell these guys are outdoorsmen, a lot of camo here. I kind of eavesdrop on them a little bit, you know, see what they're talking about. And it's kind of like an old home week, you know. It's like some of these guys haven't seen each other since the last one.
They're all farmers, and they're part of them, so they don't get to see each other that much.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. And of course, farmers hold a special place in my heart. But I can tell you, we were row crop farmers. And I was actually a pick cotton by hand. I'm that old.
Really?
I used to tell my dad, you know, I said, when I get out of school, I'm heading to the hills. Your farmer guys are going to love this now. I always told my dad, I said, all those farmers up there do sit on the front porch and watch cows get fat. Not quite that way. But this is a family event, too. Seeing lots of young couples come in here, packing a kid or two along with them. And is that standard fare at the shows?
Yeah.
And you encourage that?
Oh, yeah. We used to have a little bow shoot for little guys in the back room. It's been pretty busy so far right now.
Yeah, I went back and watched for a few minutes. It's always great fun. I like to think I've got a great imagination, but I look at those little guys and I think, what's life going to be like? Are they still going to be shooting that bow 30, 40 years from now? I hope so. I think you guys are planting some serious seeds here. And, of course, I've done this my whole outdoor career. I've been in outdoor communication for 54 years. But I've always tried to tie the gospel to the outdoors because it appeals to all of us. We're all, you know, children of God and products of nature, so to speak. And we just can't deny the fact that we are tied to the outdoors. We are. And events like this, I think, really appeals to a lot of people. And you know as well as me that it will appeal. You'll get some guys and gals that come in here that maybe, you know, don't have a faith or maybe never attend a church, and it's another way to reach out to them.
Yeah, and it takes all the pressure off of them. You come in here to this building just to have a good time and to get their deer scored, and hopefully they hear the gospel.
Absolutely.
That's the main thing is hearing the gospel. You know, we don't want it to get too big. I always think about how can we make this bigger. But if you get bigger, lots of times you lose that focus. You know.
Yeah, I think we both have probably seen that happen. But I got to applaud you guys because I've watched a lot of events like this over the years. You know, they hit their peak and then they kind of drop off. People don't want to volunteer or get involved anymore, and they kind of go by the wayside. So this is kind of a rarity anymore. There's not a tremendous lot of events out there like this, but still it looks like you're going strong here. And the food. Whose idea was that?
Well, we've always done that. We had the free food. And there's probably 15, 20 crock pots of chili back there.
Uh-huh.
And everybody from the church has donated it. You know?
That's awesome. Pretty good chili, too.
Some spicy, some not so spicy.
Yeah, I had some of the spicy stuff. I can tell you, my wife makes it spicier than that.
Yeah.
She makes an awesome chili, but oh my goodness, I had to stay away from that dessert table. I couldn't resist having a chocolate chip cookie, you know.
Yep.
Well, I got to admit, I had a brownie, too.
I need to get in there after we do this broadcast.
You better not wait too long, and I'll be gone. But our church or the association, Merrimack Baptist Association, we have a annual men and boys wild game dinner, and we pack 250, 300 guys in there. You know, it's just incredible. And, of course, we encourage people to bring a dish, but we have all kinds of wild game, the desserts and everything. But I usually video those events, take a bunch of photographs just for advertising for the next year. But probably 5 years ago, I came across an old gentleman. I just couldn't resist stopping. It probably embarrassed him because I took so many photographs of him. But it's an old gentleman, well up into his 80s, I'm sure, with his bib overalls on, his plaid flannel shirt, you know. And I'm not stretching this, Jesse. This gentleman had a big coon head that barbecued. Yeah, and he didn't have very many teeth, and he's gnawing on this coon head, you know. That's not something you see every day. But you never know what you're going to see in the Ozarks.
No.
but fine old gentleman. I'm sure he'd been raised in the outdoors. And I, when I look at people like that, you know, and we see a lot of them pass on, and to me, it's just like an encyclopedia that has gone on. And boy, I hate to lose that, lose all those stories. Of course, I've recorded a lot of stories in my lifetime. A lot of my close friends over the years, you know, they pick at me a lot. I said, Cooper, you think you know everything about the outdoors? Nah, I don't know much, but I know the people that do. Yeah. And I guarantee you, we could walk around here today and we could stop and talk to any gentleman out here and have a good outdoor story to tell.
That's why I like coming here and like having this, is because you get a lot of good stories. You know, the stories are the best thing sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. Of course, I've written over 6,000 stories in my career, but I've always said that the very best hunting and fishing outdoor stories never get told. And that's sad in one respect. But several years ago, I spent several hours with an old gentleman in Crawford County. He was way up in his 90s at the time. He had worked in CCC camps and that sort of thing. And he was telling stories about hacking railroad ties for 10 cents a day. You know, I can't even imagine the grueling work that would have been. But he talked about the little one-room schoolhouse he went to, and I'll never forget it as long as I live. And I'm glad I recorded this. It, of course, that was kind of a social place, too, the school that had their pie suppers and all that sort of thing. But he said they had this annual event. It was kind of a fundraiser for the school. Everybody would bring their pies and cakes and whatever, and they'd sell them off. But he said every kid in all 8 grades were in that one-room schoolhouse. So you had kids teaching kids, but he said, we all had to write a poem and learn it and recite it. He said, I hated that. Yeah. You could imagine little country guys doing that sort of thing. He said, but there's one poor little boy, never had a pair of shoes that I ever saw. He said he wrote his little poem, and it was about a worm. And this little guy was in 3rd grade or something, said he got up on stage, and his chin is on his chest. You know, he's not going to look up at the crowd. But he recited his little poem, and the guy telling a story, he said, I can't remember the whole thing, but the gist of it was he was so curious about this worm, he wanted a taste of it. So he put it in his mouth, and he written it out as a rhyme, but he told everybody, he said, I didn't like it. That's pretty good. But, hey, what an event here. Jesse, I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. Yep. And so it'll be a year after next before you have your next classic. Yes. Okay. But if you want to come to the First Baptist Church of Owensville, tell them where you are.
Right there in the middle of Owensville, right off Main Street.
Yeah, you can't miss it, can you?
Can't miss it. Two-story church.
Yeah, beautiful facility. We're in a big auditorium here with basketball goals and having this Deer Classic today. Well, folks, I hope you've enjoyed the program. And from Jesse Wilson and myself, hey, we're living our outdoor dreams. We encourage you to get into the outdoors and live your dreams as well. I'm Bill Cooper.
People love a good mustache. People also love a good firearm. The fine people down at Pond Center like both. They have the largest selections of firearms in the area, and with a friendly, knowledgeable staff of hombres to help you pick the gun that's right for you. You could end up riding into the sunset with a gun you love. Find them at pc72guns.com, on shelf, in store, online, or give them a call at 573-426-GUNS. That's Pond Center. Guns welcome. Mustache appreciated.
Captain Brian Wilson runs one of the tightest bow fishing operations in the business. Stainwater Bow Fishing operates out of Jerome, Missouri, and the beautiful Missouri Ozarks. They cover most Ozark streams and lakes. You haven't lived until you've searched Ozark waters during the night with Stainwater Bow Fishing while looking for giant gar, carp, and buffalo. Captain Wilson also runs a second boat on Taneycomo Lake. Call today to book a trip with Stainwater Bow Fishing at 573-263-8016. Again, that's 573-263-8016. Be sure and shoot straight.
The Living the Dream Outdoors podcast is brought to you by Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, the Fly Rod Journals, SmokerBuilder.com, Cowtown USA,
Westover Farms, Scenic Rivers Taxidermy, Stained Water Bow Fishing, Scenic Rivers Guide Service and Tours, Huzzah Valley Resort, Pico Lures, Devil's Backbone Outfitters, J&J Charters, Kaufman Cove, Alaska, Bean Creek Game Calls, Misty Mountain Guide Service, ASO Guides and Outfitters with Ryan Walker, Expedition Trailers, The Rambling Angler, and Rich's Famous Burgers.
Land ownership is the American dream. Land is the basis of all life. Our wise use of this most precious of resources ensures the survival and growth of free institutions and our American way of life. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we value the traditions and freedoms that land provides us. Every day we seek the solace of a mountain sunrise over traffic jams and smog, the calming silence of a bubbling stream over the sirens of the city, and the quiet of the countryside over the hustle and bustle of the world. We hunt, we fish, we farm. We live off the land. It's our mission to help our clients live out their dreams on the land as we do. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we believe that it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. Join us 5 days a week on Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast as the Living the Dream Outdoor Dream Team explores the most desired outdoor properties in the Midwest and whisks you away to incredible hunting, fishing, and outdoor recreation opportunities. Host Bill Cooper, an inductee of the National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame, will be joined by members of the Living the Dream Outdoors team each week as they tell tall tales, unveil tips and tactics, and rub elbows with some of the biggest names in the outdoor world. You'll also find the Living the Dream Outdoors podcast on your favorite social media platforms, including Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok.